just while sitting Sazen round before this round, this station. For some reason, as you know, we need no reasons when things comes and goes and pops up in our minds. I was suddenly, by the way, I will have one koan, maybe that was the reason. But anyways, I had this memory for some reason that there was one market, this kind of supermarket in my childhood. So that was called Eka Market. And our family used to go there like not often at all, very seldomly. But that was a kind of a great feast for us, me and my sister. That was the top thing to get the ride there and see the big shop, which wasn't that big actually, but at that time it was. And then there was another market, was called Maxi Market, and that was really much, much bigger. That was in Leppävaara. I don't know where this Eka Market was. It was a little bit closer to us. And we used to live in, we lived in Myyrmäki, Vantaa. So, but what's the point? No point. Only that I just understood that it's 50 plus years ago when this was those days. And that's a lot. Suddenly, it's a half century. And still I kind of hold those memories, like they're quite vivid. We have this Beetle, blue, light blue, Volkswagen, and no safe belts. Oh boy, that was a sign. Maybe it was a weather like this. No, more sunlight in my mind when we went there. But it was just at this time. So how this time is so fastly, swiftly going by. It was like yesterday, seriously. And already, soon I will be 57. So it is really true, older we get, perspective changes. And I don't know, at least in my case, I've noticed it a few years ago. Or maybe it was just a couple of years ago. But anyway, it feels much more clear this time. Like, it's kind of funny because if you look back, I would say that I felt much older when I was younger. In a way, it's 200 years ago when I was young. And I was very old then. But now I am much younger, although I am much older. At least older in a sense that, I mean, the notion, or there is this notion, clear understanding that the death actually can be lurking behind the corner and just pops up and say, "Hey, do you have a minute? I would like to, you know, a little thing show to you." And that's it. And it's so true. And when I was younger, I don't know, I thought I had, I thought death a lot sometimes. It was a kind of inspiration also, the mystery of it. But now it's more concrete. Not so much mystery, it's just a, it comes anytime soon. And it gives the lot whole difference and perspective for this moment. Since we don't know when the death comes, but we know for certain it is there, just waiting. So before that and from here where we are. So I think it is easier when we get older, in some sense, the whole life. Just because we know that it will end. And so we are not so much grasping. Of course, some people are a lot having that kind of attitude, and it's very difficult to die when you fight against. Who knows how much I will fight the moment it is here. But at least if we practice like Sazen, this Zen practice, this is absolutely very helpful, I'm sure, for us to meet our last moment. This is a kind of a practicing for that all the time. We are opening our grip, hands. Of course, we are dying moment after moment. If we can see it, we are actually dying all the time. Continuously dying. But it might feel a bit abstract. Before we take this koan, was there anything more about this aging thing? No. But don't be afraid. It's fun. This coming older. Less things to... I don't know what to say. My parents are still around. They are going strong. My father 85. My mother will be 80 this year. And in some sense, I would say that they too are loosening up a bit. There's some kind of a... I don't know, some kind of easygoingness. That's at least how I see it. But, and I don't think it's just a surface front that they put out. I think there is some kind of, because for them, even though they feel very youngish themselves, at least my mother, but for them it must be quite obvious that every day is a precious day. And maybe that's why they can enjoy in their own ways. If you like to read poems like my father and mother, they do that. Or some gardening or something. And you don't feel guilty of spending your hours with a book, for example. But there is the Song of Sazen that we just read together in Finnish. Let's take next line. The reason why we transmigrate through the six worlds is that we are lost in the darkness of ignorance. Going astray further and further in the darkness, when are we able to be free from birth and death? As for Sazen practice in the Mahayana, we have no words to praise it fully. The virtues of perfection, such as charity, morality, and the invocation of the Buddha's name, confession, and ascetic discipline, and many other good deeds of merit, all these return into this. Even those who have practiced it for just one sitting will see all their evil karma erased. Nowhere will they find evil paths, but the pure land will be near at hand. This Mahayana Buddhism, I mean, Zen practice is at least in this way that we have been practiced it so far, is like not so much studying Buddhist theories or kind of a Buddhism, like a philosophy and such. I don't know if that's really Zen Buddhism, but it has this feeling of you go first there, you go there. So meaning, come here fully. And then from here, we kind of start to open up for Buddhism more and more. But first we wake up. But then there are so many other schools where maybe more educational approach first. So you kind of build up the understanding of what is what. And then little by little the aspect also of waking up becomes to table. And neither of these is better or worse or good or bad. And ultimately, they, of course, are mixed together. There are some pros and cons, of course, with both of these approaches, if there is a place like this so clearly. Like sometimes maybe we chase after this awakening experience, let's say, Kensho. We are running after that experience, or we just bumps up that. We hit our head there suddenly for some reason. But then, hopefully we don't stop there. We have just opened the door and we are seeing that there is something. We shouldn't close the door or banging the doors and being some kind of special cases now. So I mean, there's a little risk of becoming arrogant or stopping one's practice clearly very, very too early. I don't know, but maybe there is in the world a lot of spiritual teachers who have had some kind of opening. And then they have started to teach from basically almost little maturation. And I think that's a real sort of risk that we too early think that we have reached something permanent, something that now we have nailed it, now we know what is this enlightenment thing. But good thing is, of course, that now we have tasted it. Now we have really experienced it through and through. Now we know it's there, it's here, it's real. It's not depending on any letters and sentences. It's direct as anything can be. So that's a very positive thing. And then again, learning Buddhism, like those theories and philosophies, what we have in Buddhism, can be really helpful. They can really open our understanding much wider, and it's more, we can navigate in the world more better. We understand, we kind of growing up with those understanding. So we need both. But sometimes we read and study. And we kind of understand. And then there is a risk that we are happy with intellectual understanding. Intellectual understanding, excellent thing, of course. But it's a bit sad if we really believe that understanding intellectually is the thing itself. It is very close to it, maybe. Because we can kind of understand it so thoroughly. And who knows? I mean, maybe this is the way also. You build up this clear understanding, and then you really take it there. But that too needs a lot of work. So no easy way, in a way. This koan I mentioned is short koan from the, again, Hekikanroku, called Chosu's A Newborn Baby. A monk asked Chosu, "Does a newborn baby possess the six senses or not?" Chosu said, "It is like a ball bobbing along on swift flowing water." The monk later asked Chosu, "What is the meaning of the ball bobbing along on swift flowing water?" Chosu said, "Moment by moment, it flows on without stopping." Kind of springly feeling here. Hopefully spring is soon here. This swiftly flowing water. You can see how snow is still there on the sides. Banks of the water, river, or little stream, and it's really coming there so full of energy down from the hill through the forest and making this nice bubbling sound and reflection of the sky and trees. And it looks so fresh, this water. You would think that it's okay to drink directly from it. It's really refreshing and cool and bright, and you can see the bottom of the stream, although it's going fast without stopping. Does a newborn baby possess the six senses or not? What does that question really is asking for? I mean, we have six senses, do we? Or do we have just one sense? Or no sense at all? Yes, we say we have six senses. But do we think of those senses when they are functioning? Let's say they are functioning well enough. With the age, of course, they start declining. impaired seeing comes, vision is not so good, hearing is completely gone. Smell, I don't smell. Everything tastes same or good. You see, of course, it's we pay attention of those things. But what about newborn baby? Does this baby really have those six senses or not? It's a beautiful, vivid picture, as I said. Okay, we have in Buddhism those categories, so many different ones, that maybe helps us to understand our situation. Maybe it helps us when we are facing our unknown condition where our suffering is just taking our hands and taking us for a walk. Maybe those categories helps us to connect with the experience we have, and we can sort of, then we don't need to think about them anymore so much. Six senses are, of course, those six gates, as we say in Buddhism. Through those gates, this I, me, myself is happening. This wheel of life, or wheel of samsara, wheel of suffering, wheel of, it has different names we have there on the wall. There is also one place where you have those six senses. As I said, it is really, there is a lot of, it's like a Buddhism 101, or how you say, that picture. There's not so much that is missing. So quickly, if we think about this wheel of life, we know how the hub, how the axle, how the center is turning and turning, the whole wheel is turning because of our ignorance, and from the ignorance comes other problems. And then there is the next ring, is this black and white ring section, where you see people falling down or going up according to what we've been doing. Simple as that. No magic. It's quite clear that we act in certain situations, certain ways, more wisely, or just reaction comes without any chance to change it into something more positive. Our ability to respond using our whole beingness is sometimes very limited. We just react. And of course, some of those reactions most likely will cause suffering. But that's how it is. It is, it's not good or bad necessarily. It's just what it is. And pain is painful. Being a human is painful, as we know. And as they say, these six worlds that are next circle, they say that human world is the best one. Because the cocktail of human life is just the right amount of bitterness and sweetness there. I've said this once before, but now I will repeat it. My late teacher in sculpture department in Academia, in Art Academy, he once stopped me, we were watching through the windows there, and he came to me and and wanted to give a little hint of teaching. And he asked me to bring some paper, which I did. And then he makes this drawing there, and he makes this cocktail glass. And then he made a couple of lines there. And then he told me that Olli, taide on, this is, language disappeared. So he said that this is art, or this is life, which are of course same thing in his case. And half of it is vodka and half of it is love. And I kind of liked that picture back then. But thinking of it now, in this context, it wasn't so different. I mean, it is a kind of human reality. We have love, we have mistakes, we have suffering. It's a nice mixture. But as we also know, those six worlds can be seen like not really that separated from each other. So perhaps it is really so that we go to hell now and then. And then we come back. Maybe we are, from 5 to 7, we are animals. And then in the evening, hungry ghosts. And during the night, sound sleep, we are in the heaven. And then next morning, hell, if we had too much vodka. So it is also like that. But if it is so, like Buddhism teaches, that these endless worlds and beings and everything like such, this kind of limitless, timeless reality, if we really can feel it, if we can kind of get a glimpse of this eternity, that we are floating on this planet, having this session going on. But this vastness is just embracing us. And there is no time. We won't disappear. There will be always one form or another coming from the action we've been doing, whatever it means. But from that context, from that point of view, I think if that would be the case, so this endless circling around because of our karma, I would say now we are really, really in a good place at the moment. So this is exceptionally wonderful time and place. Because we really can now cut through. We can really stop this endless whirl of suffering to go around and round. We can momentarily, at least, we could stop it. We could see clearly how it's functioning. How it is really what I am doing and be. It makes sense. The whole thing makes sense. So it comes down to this place and time. Here and now. This is the heart of it. This is the result. This is the cause. This is the samsara. This is the nirvana. You choose. We can really clear this mess out. One bucket after bucket, we can clear this mess out. And then next, the last circle is this 12 links of dependent arising, which is, we don't go it through, in, I mean, I think we can go a little bit of it. We can walk through the ring and that's it. But the idea is anyways that we all are connected. Everything is connected, of course. And those six senses, for example, how we see, how we experience this world of form, which also is put together, traditionally said it's put together with four elements, from those elements, fire, earth, water, air, which we have also on the altar, like represented there. So everything is put together by those four things. But how we get the contact with those things, everything, we so this is about the 12 links. But for fun, let's start from the last and go backwards. So the, like if it's a clock, 12 o'clock, or in the middle up there, I think maybe there is this 12th, or maybe it's like a half 12 and half first, but anyway, up there around 12-ish clock, we have old age and death. And it's represented, there is a picture, and there's a, you see a person, sick person and a corpse. Maybe there was someone carrying this corpse on his back. I just watched a documentary not long ago from Tibet, and they still, very strong tradition today still, some places at least, is this, that when you die, your body will be chopped in pieces. And then it's taken up to the hill, a mountain, and then those birds will eat that flesh. And then they collect those bones and will make something out of them. I don't know exactly, but at that particular one place, they will keep your head, your skull, and they will place it on the wall where your ancestors and everybody else from the village is seen. And it was fun. This guy was quite young and, I mean, very, very like a contemporary person, like just Asian guy with all bells and whistles that we have. And then he was suddenly like, was very interested in to see this thing, and he was like also, oh, but I will also be here one day. And I was quite, you know, there was just a stone and some axes, different kind of tools that you can, you will be chopped in pieces. And then those walls filled with skulls. And this guide who take him there, he was going, oh, this guy, do you remember him? Was this was a father of this skull, and this was the mother, and they were living. Oh, and then they died. This was their daughter. And then those empty iced, those skulls were staring there. Someone has more in mouth. Someone has lost all his tooth, teeth. It was beautiful. Indeed, in some sense, it was so different, it was so real. And they really, almost, I mean, they're doing this shopping there all the time, chop, 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 chop. And those birds were there, waiting, big, big birds. Would someone die, please? And then again, he has his mobile phones and everything and modern car, and off he drove. So, but he wasn't scared, or, I mean, it was so natural for him to see himself going there one day. Like I sometimes sitting in the dining room and watching this urn that we have on the altar, and I can I can imagine myself there inside in this urn, because that is something that can happen one day. If everything goes like it's planned, I will be in a small pieces there in the urn while you guys are eating. So it makes it quite real. It makes it quite good, because then you kind of, you don't need to think about it. You kind of say, oh, I will be there. Okay, fine. But now I'm not yet there. Yes. So we have 11 to go, and I think this time is also running. So maybe I will actually continue tomorrow with these 12 links of dependent arising. But what is the meaning of the ball bobbing along the swift flowing water? What is the meaning? It's an important question. What is the meaning of it? We are looking for meanings, reasons, reasons to live, reasons to do something, or we are looking for meanings. So this is a good question. What is the meaning of the ball bobbing along on swift flowing water? Tosu said, moment by moment, moment by moment by moment, it flows on without stopping. All beings attain the Buddha way.